This work, like I said, was inspired by personal family health crises, including cancer and death and treatment.
That was St. Louis artist Amy Rydell. She met Nancy and me at the Sheldon, where she's currently displaying the work she just discussed. The art Rydell produces reflects a personal turmoil, family health issues over the last 3 years. I'm Willis Ryder Arnold.
And I'm Nancy Fowler, and this is Cut and Paste. So within a very short period, Rydell's mother and two aunts were diagnosed with cancer, and in the midst of all that, her grandmother died.
One of Rydell's signature pieces is crafted from weather radar images and MRI scans. It's actually kind of made of non-traditional art stuff, too. There's glitter, there's scotch tape, and a couple other things.
She also has this other piece. It's a wig, but it's also made out of something that would really surprise you. The exhibit is called Radar Home, 11-8-13.
That is the date that my family got the call that my mom had a metastatic tumor. And it was on a Friday afternoon, and they told us she had to remain immobile. They didn't know where it was coming from. They didn't know what it was. And they'll get back to us on Monday.
Oh, man. This was a Friday, I guess? Yeah.
So the only experience my family had had with cancers before then was near imminent death. So that... put everybody into a state of shock. And I think I don't want to speak for them, but I think that is a big part of what we're all recovering from was that moment and that call. The treatments were terrible. It's on my end to see someone you love so much go through that is just about the worst. But that phone call and that moment is just burned into my psyche and my mind.
So we want to start with having you just take a look and, you know, tell us what people are going to see when they look at it.
The space is a little tough. There's a main thoroughfare with a really long wall space and then two more separate gallery rooms. So I wanted to treat the big main long wall as it is sort of a storyboard or timeline. And when you walk into the space, you're greeted by a portrait of my Aunt Carol, who is just like a ray of sunshine, powerhouse kind of woman. And that's from a photo on Christmas morning. And then the next piece is actually her putting a cold wash rag on her mom's head as she was dying. And then you start to approach these clusters of works. And I wanted it to be sensory overload. Everything's very brightly colored. There are these sometimes weird portraits, sometimes emotional portraits. There's tumors. I call them tumors made out of homemade geodes and cut-up paintings and shredded family photos. So as you go down the wall, there are these little, it's like a timeline, I guess.
In the back of the theater is this movie that you put together. Can you tell us a little bit about what the actual film is?
One of the galleries has a video installation. That's where the scent is, which smells like pine trees in here. Sorry, you can't all experience that right now. But the video is a compilation of my personal home videos in the early 90s. My parents got a video camera when my precious baby brother was born. And
those early 90s bulky video cameras. I remember
this
them well.
This one was kind of sleek, but it had those little mini tapes where the tape is just a hot mess. Anyway, had those transferred to DVD a while ago, and then I have a helper, Colin Richard, here in town, does great video editing work for me. And together, we compressed all the home video footage, so it's layered, it looks pixelated. And every now and then, a figure kind of comes to the foreground, and that's everyone in my immediate family and grandma. The sound component consists of personally recorded sounds, including being in a tornado warning over in Illinois, so the siren is going off occasionally. There's rain. There is the oxygen machine, my grandma's hospice care, and the sound of my family coming together after she passed for dinner. And then the weaving throughout is the song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which my dear friend Steve Valley composed for this video. Which goes with the pine scent, of course. Really hitting you over the head with some of these themes, I know.
It's a Christmas thing.
It's a Christmas thing. Okay. It is.
So all the women that you're paying tribute to and that you've helped care for, I mean, all the people are women. Women play a big part in your...
Yes, they do. For the most part, was heavily involved in helping my mom get through her trying times. And then also the whole family came together to get grandma through some incredibly tough years before she moved on from this plane.
So you've had some distance and you've dealt with the work in a kind of like abstract way. When you were making each of these pieces, what was kind of the hardest thing to do to actually turn the like emotional response to these trying times into a physical artwork?
The hardest thing was, first of all, knowing that I had documented my grandma's dying moments. That's an exploitative move that I am still coming to terms with. Don't know if I ever will, but I knew at the time I needed it to process what was happening, and that maybe I could use it as a communication tool someday. So when I was looking at those photos or listening to that oxygen machine drafting this work, I mean, I was crying, like holding the paintbrush and crying, and my husband would come to my studio and find me there, you know, having a tough time to get through it. But one of the most important things I did was have space from the work. So every few painting sessions, I would put it away for a few weeks or just let it hang around my studio without me having to do anything.
So what are we seeing right here in this piece?
So the piece on the floor or on the pedestal is one of my glitter installations. And at first I was just making oil paintings of these radar images. And then I wanted it to immerse my viewer a little bit more. So they kind of like melted off the wall onto the floor. And I recreate the weather radar out of glitter. And this one is the newest one. This is actually, there's a template underneath there that's a compressed image of a color MRI and a radar of a thunderstorm over St. Louis. So it really just looks like this petri dish amoebic shape of really saturated and sometimes fluorescent colors, but it's actually a very representational image of storms and cancerous tumors, actually.
Why does that say emotional to you?
Well, I was kind of hearkening back to the use of the storm through art history. Artists for generations have made paintings of literal storms and weather events, and at times it was supposed to symbolize the storm within, you know? And so I kind of really latched onto that like 10 years ago because I was too afraid to talk more straightforward about these mental health issues or things in life that a lot of us go through that we're not supposed to talk about, like a bad breakup or a period of distress. And I was looking for a more sterile way to address these very personal issues. And I thought that radar, Doppler radar imagery, was a good way to do that. And I think it's beautiful. Everything is glitter that you see.
Everything
is glitter.
So
the black,
the
brown, the maroon, the red, the pink, the blue, all the greens, everything is made of glitter.
So one of the things you mentioned that I'm really curious about is, you know, there's an MRI under there. Whose MRI is it?
That's actually ripped off the internet. And this work, like I said, was inspired by personal family health crises, including cancer and death and treatment. But I did not want to use any family medical scans at all. So that was another way to kind of keep it at arm's length and just include something I ripped off of Google Images, quite honestly.
Can you talk a little bit more about your family health and issues over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I can. I have always made work about the fear of being away from my family, losing my family. I grew up here in St. Louis. I moved away for the first time to 65 acres in northern New Mexico. It was really isolating. And that's when I first experienced true homesickness. And that was in 2004. And ever since then, it's like I've been homesick, even though now I'm back at home. So kind of some worst nightmares came true in 2013 when my mom was diagnosed with a very treatable blood cancer called multiple myeloma. And she's doing great now. But that moment was like the moment. Those fears of mortality and of someday losing the people we love and our own mortality hit home hard then.
How did you come to use the materials that you use as far as like the glitter and sort of have the joy in the work as well as the, you know, the terror?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty self-conscious hearing myself talk about this stuff, and I was told in graduate school, you know, to kind of pipe down about.
You were told to pipe
down?
I feel like
I was a little bit.
Yeah.
To maybe such journalistic work is not appreciated by everybody. So I've been very self-conscious about that for about 10 years. I use these materials because I feel like the MRIs, the tumors, these radar images of devastating weather systems, like that's heavy enough. And not everybody wants to talk about that or hear about that all the time. So I'm pretty much manipulating my viewer with the glitter and the candy colors and the saturation to come investigate this and be dazzled by it and then maybe look a little closer.
It sounds a little like you took that kind of criticism and then found a way to subvert it so that you're able to like still draw somebody into those personal issues.
Yes, you're right.
Well played there.
Yes.
So that makes me a little bit curious, you know, like what was the work that people were initially responding to as too diaristic or too journalistic?
There was a lot of my poetry involved, my bad teenage poetry, my bad early 20s poetry, which I think is lovely. But so that was involved, like written directly on walls, carved out of styrofoam.
Can you give us a couple of lines?
Well, one of my favorite lines was the title of an exhibit, and that was a pretty sparkle in the night, like you, it'll kill me. And there was, it jumped out of my chest and melted to the floor.
Which is interesting, given that that's how you're kind of, we're talking about the paintings themselves.
Yeah.
Dude, you are good. That is exactly right. I don't speak about that, but that is how I have thought about it.
I'm curious, you know, it sounds like you've been also working with stuff about your mom for a long time as well. Can you just explain why that's a subject matter that you are drawn to?
I have been working with imagery of my mother for a really long time. She's my identifier, first and foremost. You know, I've been told my whole life how much we look alike, how much we act alike. So that's where I've learned how to be a person. Also, we've had a pretty tumultuous relationship in the past. Like, I put her through a rough time as a teenager.
That's your job as a teenager, right?
And I have always just felt very protective of her. So, and I don't know if that's warranted or not. I'm sure she wants it to be the other way around. But I do. And so she's just been my subject for a long time.
Some of your earlier work involved icons Karen Carpenter and Julia Sugarbaker. What led you to work with those images and what they mean?
That was like cop-out number two in my art career. if radar's kind of number one, Karen and Julia are number two. Not that that work is invalid in any way. It's just it was another way for me to talk about me and my mom.
How so?
They are white, brown-haired, brown-eyed ladies that died. Julia Sugarbaker's reputation as the strong designing women who, you know, went up against racism and homophobia and sexism.
You're the guy who's always wherever women gather or try to be alone. You want to eat with us when we're dining in hotels. You want to know if the book we're reading is any good or if you can keep us company on the plane. And I want to thank you, Ray Don, on behalf of all the women in the world for your unfailing attention and concern. But read my lips and remember, as hard as it is to believe, sometimes we like talking just to each other, and sometimes we like just being alone.
that was some formative stuff. That's when I was growing up. Karen's story was more about the, you know, the eating disorder and the demise of this beautiful voice. And obviously, I guess it was also the subversion inherent to that story, that she's singing about, you know, birds and love all the time, and then she's got these terrible demons that were killing her, and that did kill her. And I sought, my inner demons could relate to that.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time?
So in that scenario, was Julia Sugarbaker your mom? And you were kind of Karen Carpenter, or is that too literal?
It's not too literal for me. but the thing is, they were interchangeable.
Oh, interesting.
We were all each other.
Of course.
In that work.
You had talked about your, you know, bad teenage poetry. So what's kind of the evolution of that work to this work that you have been doing recently?
Well, I think I've almost come full circle. And even though I'm not using prose in this work very much, the fact that I have this kind of tacky glitter all over the place, I'm using tape, like glitter scotch tape, as an art material, a fine art material, and I am allowing a lot of these portraits to remain on view without being masked and overlaid with other imagery. All of those things tell me that I'm kind of getting back to my true self, I think, I hope. The actual subject matter is quite forthcoming and raw and honest.
Okay.
Like that bad poetry was.
Okay. So in a way that you are coming to into your true self again after being challenged about that. Okay.
Yes. And I love The Radar. I really do. But it's been a real crutch, and it's been a mask. It's been a way for me to codify the things I really want to say.
Just like me, they long to be close to you.
So do you view this as kind of like a departure from that, and your next work that you'll be doing will be, I guess, more direct?
That's my hope. This is hard, though, and I might get scared off depending on how people receive this. I hope I don't, but I'm open to that possibility. I would like it to be, this is a fork in the road. That is exactly how I see it. This is a real change.
Where do each of those go?
One probably goes to success, and one maybe just my friends and family are my big supporters of my artwork, and maybe that's as far as I get to go with that career. I don't know how successful such raw, autobiographical, specific, I don't know how successful that can be. I feel a lot of our art world values much more elitist, worldly themes than I am producing right now. So I am aware of that.
Do people tell you, though, although your work, and maybe because your work is so personal, that it's also very relatable?
I do hear that, and I'm really grateful. It's why I do it. Or maybe it's not what makes me do it, but it's what makes me move it out of my basement studio and put it on display.
Right.
And when they tell me that, I do feel, like, validated, definitely.
In a number of the images, there are like photographs of, I believe it's you, wearing a wig of some sort, and then the wig itself is on display here. Can you describe what that looks like and kind of tell us how you came to make it?
Along with my mother's stem cell transplant, where due to the heavy chemotherapy, she lost her hair.
Okay.
This year, my beloved Aunt Carol is going through breast cancer treatment, so she's lost her hair recently. My Aunt Anne lost her hair to her chemotherapy treatments.
Gosh.
And I have watched how strong these women have been, but how it changed the way they probably felt about themselves, the way other people think of you when you are clearly maybe going through a medical situation that causes you to lose your hair. So I decided that I wanted to make a wig about 2 years ago after going to the wig shop with my mom to pick out her wig, whose name is Audrey, which is what my wig is named. And I was also paying attention to the support system that I had in place just as the daughter of someone going through this. And those are my dear friends all over the country. So I put a call out to them, and they made me hundreds of friendship bracelets. And so
that's what they are.
That's what they are. And so I have created a series of wefts, and I made a wig out of them. And it's on a head that's covered in sequins, and I just wanted it to be kind of an every person face. So it's silver sequins with blue flowers for eyes, and then a really colorful wig of friendship bracelets and ribbons. And I always knew it would just kind of be on display as its own sculpture and paying honor to the prostheses needed to cope with everyday life when you're going through treatment. But then in losing my grandma and inheriting some of her clothes, specifically this beautiful green robe she had, I decided to not only paint portraits of my family, but I'm mimicking my grandma in those photographs, wearing the wig that I made for in honor of her daughters.
I read in another article a quote that you said was important to you by Felix Gonzalez Torres. And I wondered if you could read that for us.
My pleasure. I read it every semester to my students. And the quote is, "What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to feel? Who am I supposed to identify with? And finally, above all else, it is about leaving a mark that I existed. I was here. I was hungry. I was defeated. I was happy. I was sad. I was in love. I was afraid. I was hopeful. I had an idea, and I had a good purpose, and that's why I made works of art."
What does that mean to you, and has that meaning evolved over the past few years?
That means a great deal to me. I have been, Felix Gonzalez Torres is like my number one art person. His work helped me understand the enormous meaning that can be inherent to a seemingly minimal gesture. And that like blew my mind when I first learned about that. But that quote, I guess the way it has evolved, it's like a starting point for making work, I believe. Just leaving a mark that you existed and that your experience is enough of a legacy to leave on this world. And it's really important to me to teach my students that what they're doing is important. But I believe it's evolved in that I would like the reach to be broader now as a grown-up. That I in the I statements in that quote, that they are we statements now for me.
So that was St. Louis artist Amy Rydell, and she was ending with a poem that really inspires her work and kind of defines what she tries to do in her art. This is Cut and Paste, produced by Willis Ryder Arnold.
And Nancy Fowler, with help from our editor, David Cazares. The music you've heard in our intro and outro were made by local musician Eric Hall.
You can find Cut and Paste at stlpublicradio.org or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.